Our next case is 10-218 in the matter of Barbara Zimwaldi versus Madeira and Indian Hill Joint Fire District and Stephen Ashbrook. Mr. Weisenfelder.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, counsel. I'm Will Weisenfelder, and seated with me at council table is Laura Hillerick. We represent Chief Stephen Ashbrook in this matter. We're here on a very narrow but yet very important issue. The issue, simply stated, is whether provision of the revised code 2744.
Excuse me, counsel, would you pull that microphone a little closer so we can hear better?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Whether revised, oh, and by the way, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Whether revised code section 274409B removes an employee of a political subdivision from consideration of immunity where an employee has asserted a claim against the political subdivision out of an action stemming from the employment relationship. The court below concluded that the section removed immunity from the employee, and in this case, Chief Ashbrook, notwithstanding the fact the statute contains no such provision that it applies to the employee of the political subdivision. The First District's decision is contrary to the plain and unambiguous language of the statute and also the legislative intent to confer immunity on employees of political subdivisions. We first examine revised code section 274409B. Its title provides great insight as to intent. It is entitled Exceptions. It provides for five instances where immunity cannot be considered, that it is withdrawn from either the employee or the political subdivision, or in some instances, both. Subparagraph A relates to contractual liability. In that instance, the immunity is withdrawn not only from the political subdivision, but also from the employee. Subparagraph B, the paragraph that brings us here today, relates to civil actions by an employee against a political subdivision arising from the employment relationship. Nowhere in that portion does it mention employee. Subparagraph C, a civil action against a political subdivision by an employee essentially relating to the conditions of employment, wages, hours, etc. The last, the subsection D relates to civil action by sureties. And presumably by the way the statute is drafted, it applies to everyone. Finally, the last action, the last section, subsection E, withdrawals immunity for civil claims in violation of the Constitution or statute of the United States, typically or claims brought pursuant to 42 U.S.C. section 1983. On those types of claims, neither the political subdivision nor the employee is clothed with immunity by the state statute based upon the claims asserted under 42 U.S.C. section 1983. It is our position that the omission of the word employee from subsection B was intentional by the legislature, that the employee was not intended to be exempted from immunity for actions stemming from or arising out of the employment context.
But if that employee is then found to have been liable, would the subdivision nonetheless be accountable for the act of an employee or under master-servant agency theory?
Your Honor, my interpretation is that the legislature exempted employees so they're not caught up in the litigation. But by still clothing them with immunity, they didn't deny the plaintiff a remedy. The plaintiff still has a remedy against the political subdivision for actions arising from the employment relationship.
I thought your point was that in subsection A, there was an exclusion for the political subdivision and employees.
Correct. They were both
the contractual liability. And then in subsection B, there's an exclusion for the political subdivision, but it doesn't mention and employees thereof.
Correct.
And I guess my question is, if there were a judgment against an employee, would the subdivision nonetheless be accountable by virtue of an agency or master-servant relationship, in your view?
Is that taking into account that the, under B, that the employee, that the immunity is withdrawn?
I guess it's for you to answer any way you find appropriate.
I, from legal principles under a theory of agency or respondeat superior, my thought would be that unless there was an argument by the political subdivision that the employee was acting outside the course and scope of his employment or in such a fashion that, in the typical sense, the employer would not be responsible, that may be an argument that the political subdivision would have. But in the typical sense, assuming that the employee was acting in the course and scope, I would think that the respondeat superior would apply.
Now, in spite of the fact that the statute says the political subdivision is immune?
Well, no. Under subsection B, the political subdivision has no immunity.
Oh, it's excluded from liability.
It's withdrawn. And that's the whole issue, is that whether or not that particular section withdraws immunity not only from the political subdivision but from the employee. And it's our position that because the statute is silent and does not mention employee, that it only applies to the political subdivision, and the employee of the political subdivision is still clothed with the immunity.
Thank you.
Beyond what I believe to be is the clear intent of the statute, recent decisions construing the statute have also found or also held that 2744.09b does not apply to employees of the political subdivision. The cases are cited in the briefs, but just for sake of the discussion, the Campoletti decision versus the City of Cleveland, decided by the Eighth Circuit, Sampson versus Cuyahoga, decided by the Sixth Circuit, and Satterfield versus Carnes, a decision by the late Judge Holshue. Each of those cases found that 2744.09b did not apply, did not exempt or accept employees of a political subdivision from immunity. In each of those cases, it was clear that the language of the statute, where it didn't provide that the employee was accepted, that there is no need to look any further, that it's clear and ambiguous on its face, and the court need not resort to any type of judicial interpretation or go beyond that to determine the meaning of the statute. We believe that it must conclude that the application of 2744.09b is limited to the political subdivision. Aside from the clear meaning of the statute, aside from the cases that have construed the statute, there is, for lack of a better description, a public policy consideration as well, that the legislature enacted immunity to protect not only political subdivisions, but probably more importantly, the employees of the political subdivision. And if you compare the immunity afforded to a political subdivision and the immunity afforded to an employee of a political subdivision, the immunity afforded to the employee is much broader, more far-reaching than the immunity afforded to the political subdivision.
Counsel, in looking at this, it appears to me that Judge Winkler just said, look, there's a jury question here on whether or not your client's the chief, right?
Yes.
Whether or not the chief was malicious his conduct, and therefore you can't tell at this point whether he's cloaked with immunity or not cloaked with immunity, so you don't get summary.
Your Honor, may I address that?
Am I misunderstanding that?
There is a distinction. The Court of Appeals, when Judge Winkler's decision was before the First District, chose instead, rather than to rule whether there was a genuine issue of material fact on the motion for summary judgment that had been filed on Chief Ashbrock. Instead, the Court of Appeals decided, no, 2744.09b applies, and we never get to 2744.03a6 to determine his entitlement to it.
They just say you're always in the barrel. You can't get out. Right.
Absolutely. So
and that's probably not right. So don't we really – what we really have here is we affirm for different reasons and say it appears – you know, we're not going to try and examine the facts here. The Winkler is right that there's a dispute as to whether or not in or out. And they seem to be saying just the nature of this kind of a claim is such that you're always outside the scope of employment. And that wouldn't necessarily be true, as you point out. If the chief was acting with honest motives and not doing anything that was retaliatory, that would be immune. The chief would be immune. And I take it they're looking at this and saying, well, these cases usually involve sexual harassment or some other bad thing that we would all agree always takes the employee out of the immune category.
Your Honor, the state of the record is such today that, you know, the issue of whether the chief acted with malicious purpose and bad faith or wanton reckless misconduct, you know, isn't really before the court.
We can't tell.
In fact, what happened to us is that on the interlocutory appeal on the denial of the summary judgment motion, we never got that consideration before the First District as to whether or not there truly is. That was what went up to the First District. Was Judge Winkler's decision correct, given the state of the record, that this truly is a genuine issue of material fact? We never got that consideration for the First District. So really what we're asking for here is for this court to overrule or reverse the decision of the First District and remand it to the First District for consideration of the issue that was originally on appeal, as is this state of the record, does it show that Chief Ashbrock acted with malicious purpose, in bad faith, or wanton reckless conduct that would deprive him of immunity. We never got that consideration on the interlocutory appeal.
What's the state of the record? How far did they get? What would they have to rely on for that?
Chief Justice, the First District, the record was fully briefed on the issue as to whether the chief acted with malicious purpose and bad faith. It was there. It was before the court, and that was one of the arguments that the state of the record is such, no. Given this, the definitions
state of the record is such, no what? What would the First District look to determine whether the chief acted with malicious or in retaliation, et cetera?
Now, that's what was briefed. There are depositions.
Okay, that's what I'm asking.
Yes, no. The record is complete. There was quite a bit of discovery that was conducted while it was in the trial court. The deposition of the chief, the deposition of Mrs. Omwaldi, deposition of other firefighters. I'm down to the record is complete in the First District for them to make that determination as to whether or not the chief's conduct falls within one of the exceptions to his immunity.
So that's what you're asking for is to go back to the appellate court, have them review the record, make a determination, and if it is malicious or retaliatory, et cetera, then it would go back to the trial court.
Or at least rather than saying whether it is or isn't malicious, that the Court of Appeals deems that we can't answer this.
Would remand that for the trial court.
We're questions of law. It's a question of fact for the jury. If I have a minute left, if
all right, you can reserve that for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Mezeboff?
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, counsel. Appellant's position, as I understand it, is that a state employee is presumptively entitled to state immunity for his or her discriminatory acts committed in the course of employment. This position, I respectfully submit, cannot be reconciled with either the plain and unambiguous language of the statute 24.
Well, that's where I get into trouble, because you have A that specifically adds the language. If neither A nor B had and its employees, maybe you can make a public policy argument they intended to close it. But because they put that language in A and they don't put it in B, it seems to me your argument is a legislative fix. You want us to add words to get to where you want when they specifically left them out. And you know we try to not do that. We try not to write and add words. So how do we change the statute language?
We are clearly at odds, the appellant and the appellee, with respect to the interpretation of this statute.
It's not an interpretation. It's just not in there. So you say that we should add those words and include employees.
Well, I believe the plain and unambiguous language of the statute does support our position. And the reason for that is, in our view, the legislature made a clear distinction between civil actions and claims. A civil action, according to the legislature, civil actions by an employee or the collective bargaining representative of an employee against his political subdivision to any matter that arises out of the employment relationship between the employee and the political subdivision exempts the entire chapter, 2744. It takes immunity off the table, absolutely. In this case, Ms. Zumwalde did bring an action against her political subdivision for retaliation that occurred in the course of her employment relationship. The legislature, as I read this statute, made a clear and conscious decision to take immunity off the table for anybody at all times in any matter involving employment discrimination.
Say a political subdivision in Section B. They don't
Correct.
Say supervisors, fellow employees.
No, it doesn't. But it says a civil action by an employee exempts this chapter does not apply. 2744 does not apply to anyone, anybody, be he or she an employee, a supervisor, a manager, or a political subdivision, if the underlying civil action.
So the actions by the political subdivision are going to negate immunity for anybody that works for the political subdivision.
Correct. In matters involving the employment relationship. If they wanted to express it otherwise, they would have said, as they did in E, if there's a civil claim brought by an employee against his or her political subdivision, that will be exempted. But they didn't say claim. They said a civil action, which subsumes all claims within that action. It's a clear expression, in our view, by the legislature that actions brought by employees against his or her political subdivision in matters involving employment is off the table for immunity.
Can I ask for, because I'm not sure I'm following you. When I read 2744.09B, you're saying you disregard after the comma where it says civil actions by an employee, you think that eliminates immunity for everybody. You don't read the rest of this.
No, I do read the rest of it. The rest of it being against the political subdivision relative to any matter that arises out of the employment relationship between the employee and the political subdivision. The operative words here are arising out of the employment relationship and civil actions. This is a civil action by an employee against her political subdivision for a matter arising out of the employment relationship.
And another employee against the political subdivision.
Well, I agree.
Okay.
She did also sue the employee. But once, I believe the legislature is saying, once an employee sues his or her political subdivision for a matter arising out of the employment relationship, the fact that he or she also sued the employee is irrelevant. That matter, the civil action against the political subdivision for an employment-related matter, takes immunity out of the equation.
And so your contention is you don't get to 2743 and have to determine whether the employee's conduct was outside the scope
Correct.
Of employment.
Correct. Correct. We could also – there's another argument, too, which was not raised. It would be if the matter goes back to the Court of Appeals, and that's simply the assertion of immunity under 411202I, and that brings into 27 – brings us to 27 03A6-3. But we don't have to go there.
Counsel, why is it significant that your client needs to be able to establish liability, personal liability on behalf of the employee in order to get a recovery if the the allegations are proven true?
Because he was personally malicious. As a matter of fact, this is a series of cases. The original case we brought resulted in a finding of punitive damages against the chief. We believe this is just a continuation of that conduct. He should be exposed. And I think what's significant, if assuming, as we must, there's a difference of opinion with respect to the plain and unambiguous language of this statute, and the court's going to resort to statutory construction, statutory interpretation, the court's first it wants to glean the intent of the legislature, the purpose behind this statute to begin with. And it wasn't long ago that I argued in the Somerville case, matters of immunity, and the court will recall that in its ruling, the court said, we noted in Hubbell that the manifest statutory purpose of RC Chapter 2744 is the preservation of the fiscal integrity of political subdivisions. It's not the protection of employees. It's the preservation of the fiscal integrity of political subdivisions. And I challenge my counsel on the other side to argue how it is in the interest of the preservation of the fiscal integrity of political subdivisions to, in answer to Justice O'Donnell's question, allow political subdivisions to be stripped of immunity and grant immunity to the employees who commit the acts of discrimination, which then impose liability on the political subdivision. It makes no sense whatever, not if the public policy is to preserve the fiscal integrity of the political subdivision. There's one other.
And if the employee was malicious and meets the test of acting beyond the scope of employment, which your suit presumably alleges.
That's our position.
Yeah. Then that employee has to be sued, doesn't it, for you to make your case?
Absolutely. Well, he should be sued. He certainly should be sued. And, yes, ultimately, if somebody found that he acted outside the scope and there's no agency relationship, then he should be held responsible, which brings us to the next public policy with which I think this court must be concerned, and that's the purposes behind 4112, the entire chapter, which deals with discrimination in the private sector, discrimination in the public sector. And when we talk about discrimination in the public sector, we also need to refer to the Gennaro case, which made clear that discrimination by anybody, be it an employee, a manager, a supervisor, or an employer, it doesn't matter, in any place, at any time, I believe, is the language of this court, is to be eradicated. And the way you eradicate it is hold people responsible. And that's what the legislature did in 4112.02i.
If someone were acting in a discriminatory capacity, wouldn't they be under 2744.03? So if you're acting in a discriminatory or malicious capacity, you're acting outside the scope of your employment, assuming your political subdivision is not authorizing you to
correct
act in a discriminatory fashion. So why wouldn't you be under 2743?
Well, we could be under all of these, but the legislature says we don't have to go there, number one, because it's an employment relationship, which we've had that argument. Number two, employees are not granted statutory immunity when there's another section of the revised code which imposes liability directly on them, which 4112.02i does, which proscribes discrimination by any person against someone who participates in protected
activities.
Well, I
guess I'm getting back to Justice Pfeiffer's original point.
Well, I agree.
It's the issue of what — it's a question of fact, because either way, there's no practical difference in the outcome if you sue under 2744.03 for the employee and 2744.09 for the political subdivision. The issue is a fact-based issue about the conduct.
Justice Brown, I agree with you. We get to the same place in any one of three ways. We get it either the plain language of the statute, 2744.09b. We get there on 2744A63C, which is where liability is imposed by any other provision, and that's pursuant to 4112.02i, and we get there pursuant to 2744.06a3, where the court found these are issues of fact, and we get to the same place. There's no immunity here, and the employee in question is not entitled to win this case unless a jury finds that he did not commit acts of retaliation, and that's a question of fact.
When would B ever apply under 09B? I mean, if you're saying that the other statute covers all actions by an employee against their political subdivision, then when would it B ever apply?
2744.09B?
Yeah.
It would apply here because this is a civil action by an employee against her political subdivision for a matter arising out of the employment relationship.
It says against the political subdivision. It doesn't say against the employee.
The legislature said a civil action as distinguished from a claim. A civil action subsumes numerous claims. Once a civil action is brought, which has those ingredients, that being an action by an employee, Ms. Zumwalde, against the political subdivision, the fire district, about a matter which arises out of the employment relationship, immunity under 2744 is off the table for anybody and everybody for all time. It just has no application for an employee in that circumstance. It appears to me that the legislature has said that matters involving the employment relationship between a political subdivision and their employees is sui generis, if you will. That's distinct from the obligations the employer has, the political subdivision has to matters, people in the general public. We're treating employment matters differently. Employers, managers, employees, and people who supervise other employees have no greater immunities, and employees have no less rights with regard to matters involved in the employment relationship. Immunity doesn't matter.
I understand your policy argument, but then when you read the A and B, there's a clear distinction. That's where I'm having trouble following your logic.
Well, I think the distinction, I believe, is found in the language of arising out of the employment relationship, which we see again in C as well. They're talking about the legislature is talking about the subject area of employment disputes. Where there's an employment dispute, immunity is not implicated, regardless of the claim. But if it's an employee bringing an action against a political subdivision about an employment-related matter, be it wage and hours, be it discrimination or retaliation,
against the political subdivision.
Right. Yes. But immunity is not involved in
any. They leave
the
out.
Chapter is. I understand, but the chapter is not involved. That's what civil. This chapter does not apply to. That's what the opening line of 2744.09 is. This chapter does not apply to civil actions.
And you're reading to civil actions against a political subdivision and its employees. That this chapter does not apply to the political subdivision.
I believe it's,
and its employees.
I believe it's implicit in that by using the term civil action, it's implicit that any subsidiary claims or collateral claims against an employee in that same lawsuit, which has been brought by the employee against the political subdivision, excludes liability.
Okay, but it is not necessary to bring Mr. Ashcroft into this for your client. She could have just sued the subdivision?
She could have, but I think in answer to Justice O'Donnell's question, if she brings a lawsuit and she gets liability against Chief Ashbrock, who's left holding the bag? The political subdivision. And how does that...
Not if it's shown that he acted outside of the scope of his employment without authority and without the subdivision condoning his activities.
Well, that tells us clearly then that the legislature wants to bring the employee, expose the employee to liability, and that's why they made it civil actions rather than claims.
They don't need this. Never mind. Go ahead.
I believe my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've saved about a minute.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I think there are three issues that I want to address in my remaining time. First, counsel's assertion that by the language in 2744.09b, because it arises out of the employment relationship, somehow includes the employee that, because it's a civil action, includes the employee, and so it need not be included in the statute, is not consistent with the decisions from the court with the cases that were cited earlier. Campoletti was a civil action. Sampson was a civil action. Satterfield was a civil action. Those were all civil actions, and it rose out of the employment relationship, and each court determined that 2744.09b did not apply to the employee, only to the political subdivision. There was a question raised during Mr. Mezeboff's presentation that, you know, it makes little sense that if we take the political subdivision, strip them of the immunity, why would you still clothe the employee with immunity? Well, if a review of the statute clearly shows that that was the legislative intent. The immunity that's afforded to the employee is much broader than the immunity afforded to the political subdivision. The immunity afforded to the employee is subject to three exceptions. One is he outside or she outside the course and scope of the employment, acted with malicious purpose, bad faith, or wanton or reckless, or is liability imposed by another section of the revised code. That's as far as it goes. In like measure, analyzing the immunity afforded to the political subdivision, specifically, the political subdivision is at times liable for the conduct of the employee who is not liable for that conduct. The negligent operation of a motor vehicle, the political subdivision is potentially liable. The employee is not.
Thank you.
Of negligent counsel, acts of
counsel, you've used your time.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
One second.
No, counsel.
Sorry, Your Honor. Thank you.